Welcome to Mormon Happy Hour. My name is Colleen Dietz. Join me and my guests each week for an entertaining recap of the hottest topics in Mormonism. We keep tabs on social media and headline news so you don't have to. Don't miss our live pro tips as you adjust to your new and exciting post-Mormon life. Mormon Happy Hour is here to bring you the irreverent side of Mormonism, wherever you may be. Welcome to episode 63. I hope this episode will be universal and timeless, and I hope that this will be a first-time episode for many who have graduated from Mormonism and are anxious and perhaps a bit mystified by the world of alcoholic beverages. This is a re-recording of the Mormon Happy Hour first-time drinking tips that I have been able to add to with another year of drinking experience and research, and have picked a fabulous guest host perfect for the job of bestowing all of our not expert knowledge on the subject of safe and exciting alcohol consumption. Just at the beginning, I want to make the statement, there is no one that says that you need to partake or even enjoy alcohol as opposed to Mormon. No one worth your time, anyway. The beauty is you get to make that decision based on your own evaluation, experiences, and judgment for what is best for you personally. There is no longer a rule that determines your worth, character, or privileges based on whether you drink or not. Nope. Not anymore. If this is your first time joining us for Mormon Happy Hour, I am so glad you found us, my listeners and I, because we are here to embrace all of our hang-ups and weirdness left over from Mormonism and bravely relearn what life means to us, heal and find happiness through our own unique paths, with a few stops for refreshment along the way, whether that be an alcoholic beverage or even just kombucha. Which is tasty and damn good for you. But you get to disagree with me about the taste. I know, I get it. That's how this works. So welcome all and enjoy some first time drinking tips for the fresh post-Mormon and really anyone at all. Enjoy. Welcome to Mormon Happy Hour. I have a special event planned for today that I've been dying to do for so long, and I finally found the perfect co-host to do this with me. So today I am bringing back first-time drinking tips with the wonderful Chloe.
Hello, I'm so excited to be here. I love talking about alcohol.
I love that you're here, and first time drinking tips is just, you know, Mormon Happy Hour drinking tips, duh.
Right. So true.
So today, and if anybody doesn't remember, this is Chloe. She's been on a couple of episodes. She's from the Wordless podcast, which is great. Oh my God. Do you see what I just did in my mascara?
Yes, I do. Do you want to fix that? Do you want to pause? Do you want to pause some recording?
No, my Patreon.
I was wondering if it was like, I was like, no, I swear she doesn't have crow's feet that look like that.
No, my eyes water for whatever reason when I record. I don't know what it is. Okay, that's better. You're welcome, Patreon subscribers. That was an interesting little, whoops.
What are we drinking this morning?
Okay, so I brought, you can go first because you have the more interesting fun thing. So what did you bring?
So first of all, I think it's important to note that it's like morning when we're recording this, which is why we are not actually drinking. Well, I'm not drinking an alcoholic beverage. So I am drinking a dirty chai latte from Starbucks, which is a chai latte with a shot of espresso. I have more alcohol drinking experience than coffee drinking experience, but I'm getting there. And this is delicious. It is like, I believe actually, Colleen, these are your words. It's like a warm hug. Mm-hmm. It's so yummy. It's like Christmas in a cup. It's delicious. So that's what I'm drinking this morning. Love coffee, it. Not alcohol. I'm still breaking the word of wisdom. Still on point.
Achievement unlocked. Yes, and dirty chai. Chais, if you haven't ever had a chai tea, it's like gingerbread. I wouldn't even say it's like pumpkin spice. I think it's more like a gingerbread type of a thing.
Yeah. So, it's delicious.
Jinx.
If you have not ventured into the world of coffee, it's a good entry drink.
For sure. Because it's sweet. It's a latte. So lattes mean that it has a lot of like foamed milk in it. So it's a great first step. And then if you guys just get a chai latte, then it's just the mix. It's just chai tea with foamed milk. But if you get a dirty chai, then that means that you're adding espresso shots, which espresso is just grounds with water hard pressed through it really quickly. And so it pulls out a lot deeper, richer flavor.
Can I make a plug for our coffee episode on Wordless? Yes. If you want to jump into coffee, we've got a really good episode on Wordless of all about coffee.
It's true. Okay. I'll put it in the show notes for sure.
Awesome. As long as you come back. I'll always come back. I love you.
And so today, I'm drinking. I just have a cup of coffee right here. And this coffee this morning actually is, if you remember from a lot of episodes earlier, I did an episode on barrel aged coffee. So this is actually a cup of some barrel aged coffee from a local coffee roaster. Jarman's Craft Coffee. So I'll put a link in the show notes to that interview as well. It's a brilliant process where he takes green coffee beans, like pre-roasted, like he orders them straight from like Colombia or Ethiopia or wherever he gets them. And then he goes and sources bourbon barrels from local distilleries. So he'll get a bourbon barrel. Oh. He orders the beans and then he pours the green beans into the bourbon barrel and he rolls them once a day and he lets them age for about a month. And then he takes them out and tests them periodically until they get to the profile that he wants. And then he roasts them. And it's fantastic. Like there's something about the aging process. Like it begins, like if you know anything about aging and the beginning of fermentation, fermentation, like it breaks down things, obviously. And so it changes the profile of the coffee bean to just make it mellow and floral and fruity. And so it completely, to me, changes the flavor. And it's an experience all in of its own. So anyway,
I'm clicking on that link in the show notes once it's up. I'm just about to the point where I'm ready to like get a grinder and a coffee maker. I actually had like really good coffee at someone's house the other day and I was like, oh, so, and I'm almost ready to out myself enough to like my family to have a coffee maker on my counter. Almost. We're not quite there, but maybe a French press.
Yeah. Oh, I always French press. And that's how I make my coffee is we grind it in our I have a hangover from Mormonism, which is I have a KitchenAid wheat grinder attachment. So that's my coffee grinder.
Nice.
You know, stick it to the food storage. I'm going to grind my coffee with it.
Love it. And then, I love it.
So I do 5 tablespoons of ground and then I fill up the press with boiling kettle water. And then I let it sit steep for 3 minutes and then you slowly press the plunger and that's your coffee. So anyway,
all right.
So we are here to talk about first time drinking tips. But before we get started, I figured that we should both, we have to prove our drinking cred, right? So people know.
Yes. I will say, I don't feel like either one of us is experts, but if you want some first time drinking tips, we've been there. So
we've got them.
Yeah.
And I've also gathered these tips from many, many, many other crowdsourced places that have many professionally experienced drinkers. So you'll get some good
professional. Okay.
Like as in they've been drinking since high school, unlike any other Mormon.
Yes. Or most anyway.
Right. Most. I should say most. There are those naughty little Mormons.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So do you want to go first? Do you want to talk about how long you've been drinking, stuff like that?
Yeah. So I had my first intentional drink because earlier in life I had a few like, oh, someone accidentally served me something. So my first intentional drink was about 2.5 years ago in November. Oh no, it's 3.5 years now. It actually was November of 2015.
Oh, wow.
I think I said 2016 to you earlier, but it's November of 2015. So it's been a little while. I will say I had that first drink and then I didn't necessarily like jump straight into drinking constantly or consistently, mm-hmm. obviously not constantly, but, but that was my first experience. And so since then, and I'll tell the story in a minute, but since then I have done, like I took a cocktail class at a cooking school that's here in the Seattle area. That was super fun and super interesting. And I've done some wine tastings. So a little bit of experience there. I've also just taken advantage when I've gone out with people who I'm comfortable with, and we'll talk about this in tips, but when they know that I haven't had much to drink, I'm always tasting their drinks and I will frequently order like flights. So like a flight of beer or a flight of cider, just to be able to taste a bunch of different things and figure out what I like, what I don't like. So that's kind of my street cred there.
Nice. And a flight, and just in case anyone, because yes. Those are new to me. So a flight is if you go to like a brewery or a distillery, do just regular bars do flights? I don't know if they do, but
they will frequently.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So you can get a flight pretty much anywhere. So if you order a flight, they'll bring you out like 5 to 7 small servings of the drink. So you can taste, it's like a tasting. And so you get to taste all of the different either beers or liquors or whatever, wherever you are, whatever you ask for. And it's a great experience because then you have the name and what it is, and then you can like really identify what everything is and what you like and what you don't like. It's really fun.
Oh, I just remembered. I also did a Scotch whiskey tasting when I was in Scotland this past summer. So I've tried a number of things in Scotland. Yes. I was like, I'm in Scotland and this is where like Scotch is from. I'm going to try this stuff. Go down that little road.
You lucky dog. And do you want to tell your first time story?
Sure. So I was I have kind of a crazy life. I was living in Hong Kong and I had been dating someone. I was living in Tokyo before that and had been dating someone in Tokyo who was raised Jehovah's Witness. So we had had a lot of really good conversations just about Mormonism. And mm-hmm. I was kind of in the process of figuring out that I wanted to leave, if that makes sense. I'm sure many of your listeners have been there. Mm-hmm. And he was just a great person to talk through all that with. We weren't dating anymore, but he came to Hong Kong for like a weekend trip. And I was at a point where I was like, I really want to drink. Like I want to try it. But I also, you know, you just get told all these stories. And even though I have friends and siblings who have drunk, I hate the word drink, by the way, and conjugating that verb. I have friends who have had alcohol in the past. And I knew it wasn't like people have a glass of wine, it's no big deal, but you have all this like anxiety around it. Like if I have a drink, am I going to be totally drunk? And so I just talked to him. I was like, I really want to do this. Will you go with me and help me order drinks and make sure like I'm not crazy and that I don't do anything stupid? And so that's what we did. And I don't even think I ordered a drink initially. He ordered spiced rum and Sprite because that was like a drink that he liked, whatever. Okay. And I had a sip and it was actually really good. But I was, you know, and I was super intimidated by ordering a drink. So I started with a mojito. That was my first drink. I'd gotten lots of like virgin mojitos and that seemed like a good place to start. And it was delicious. Mm-hmm. And then had a few sips of his. I think I probably ordered one more fruity cocktail. I was in, you know, Hong Kong, there's all these tropical exotic drinks. So I probably ordered another mojito, but like mango or something, mm-hmm. With some flavor. And then we did a shot because I, you know, let's do a shot. Only one. A shot called a brain hemorrhage.
Oh no.
Which, yes, which is disgusting now. Like, it's so sweet. At the time, because I'd never had anything to drink, it went down really easily, but it's beautiful. It's so crazy looking. It, like, do you know what it is, Colleen?
No. I'm brain hemorrhage.
Okay. So it's some kind of liqueur and there's grenadine in it and Bailey's. And so it's like, I'll need to look it up and actually correct this, but it looks like a brain, because the Bailey's with the alcohol just doesn't mix totally. And then there's the grenadine in it. It's crazy. But it was super sweet and lovely. I probably could find a picture that I can send to you that you could put in the show notes.
You're looking
at it now.
Yes. So it's 1 ounce of peach schnapps in a shot glass.
Oh, it's schnapps. That's right. Yep.
Add in, and schnapps, in case anyone's new to drinking, schnapps are like, they're super sweet flavored liqueurs. They're lower in alcohol. They're usually in the teens, like in the 15% range, which normal liquor is in like in the 35 range. So liqueurs are lower alcohol, high sugar, high flavor. So 1 ounce of peach schnapps in your shot glass, add in 1/2 ounce of your favorite Irish cream, because there's lots of brands of Irish cream. Bailey's is just one. It's supposed to float. Add in a small amount of grenadine. So what it looks like is, like, here's your shot glass. It's clear because the peach schnapps is clear. Then you slowly pour in your Irish cream. Sometimes they hold a spoon over. And so then you pour over the spoon and it kind of helps it, like, you know, go in easier.
Stay on top.
And so then it stays on top of the schnapps. And so it's like clear. And then there's like brown liquid, because Irish cream is kind of like, it's really creamy coffee looking. So Irish cream on the top, and then you add the grenadine, and it goes through the brown layer, and grenadine is red because it's like a cherry syrup. So you pour the grenadine through, and it kind of like brings a little bit of the brown down, and it bubbles, and then that's when it looks like a brain down at the bottom.
And it looks like it's hemorrhaging, right? Because it's all red down at the bottom. So it's beautiful. I mean, it's so weird looking, but it's beautiful. But yes. And like, I've discovered since that lots of bartenders have no idea what a brain hemorrhage is, which is fascinating to me, because it's disgusting. I mean, if you read the ingredients, like, it's so sweet and there's the cream, and anyway, but whatever. It was fun to do a shot, and I have a picture that, of course, is buried in my phone, so no one ever sees it if my nieces and nephews are looking at my phone. But I have a picture of the shot that we did together. That's so awesome. That was my first experience. I will say I definitely felt good. I was kind of probably buzzed on tipping over to like drunk. Mm-hmm. I was in Hong Kong, where you walk. So, you know, we walked home. I held his arm. I remember took some escalators home, because that's how I got home, was on escalators. And he made sure I got home safe. Nice. So it was a super positive first experience. He didn't let me drink enough that I like got sick or was like out of control. My biggest fear was just losing control. I have high anxiety around that. And so it was perfect. First time experience.
Nice. I love it.
Yes.
So now I'm going to try and dig up some drinking cred here and then tell my first time, which I okay. So here's how it goes. So I started dating a Never Mormon after my divorce in 2012. And so he obviously has been drinking since high school, and drinking is no big deal. And we would hang out on the weekends a lot. And on the weekends he would go to his brother's house, and then they would, you know, hang out and play games or drink or make wings and drink. And so I would go hang out with him, and I was still like, in 2012, I was still very Mormon. And so I was Mormon, but not attending and wanting to, like, you know, like, I don't have any rules.
I'm branch out.
Yeah. And so I would sip his beer, and so I was in love, so we have to preface it with that. But the smell of beer on his breath, like that yeasty smell,
you loved it.
It smelled like pizza dough, like the yeasty pizza dough that I love. Oh, I know. And whenever I tell people that, they're like, "You're gross. Like, that's disgusting. You like the smell of beer on someone's breath. Like,
I remember dating someone before I left and he drank beer and whatever. And I liked him, but I just remember going, could you please just not drink beer? Cause I want to kiss you, but I do not, that just does not do it for me. Anyway. So I think it's fascinating.
So I'm the weirdo that likes the smell.
We're all different. We're all different. It's fine.
And then the funny thing is that sometimes he would switch to, God, what was it? There was a liquor that he would drink, but he would drink some liquor that he'd make like a, I don't even know if it was like a rum and coke or something like that. And he would drink it. And I'm like, oh, your breath smells like acetone. Like, that's disgusting. And so like liquor, I didn't like, but beer, interesting. I did like. Yeah. So, and I was definitely kissing him a lot. So I paid attention.
Love it.
And so we, you know, started dating in 2012, but I did not start finishing a drink. Like, I would always just sip his and that's it. That's all I would do. I would never order my own. I would never have my own. I would never let him put my own drink in front of me. Cause I was like, no, I'm not drinking. And it wasn't until I know, I'm pathetic.
It's okay. We've all been there.
It wasn't until, like, I would say about 3 years ago that I started ordering my own drinks and finishing my own beers and really drinking. So I've only really been drinking on my own for about 3 years. And I did start with, when we were dating in like 2013, we would go out. This was our favorite date is we'd go to Whole Foods and because they have an excellent beer selection at Whole Foods. Excellent. And so we would pick out lambics, which if you never heard of lambics, lambics are like fruity, really, really fruit, like they're beer brewed with fruit. So they're kind of like a wine, but it's a beer. And so there's lots of fruit juices in it and it's a little bit sweeter. So we would pick up a really good lambic and then we'd swing by like the Whole Foods bakery, which is amazing. And then pick up some, some sweet, you know, piece of, you know, filet mignon or whatever good meat. And that was our date night is we, you know, kind of just get a Whole Foods dinner with, you know, some lambics. So it wasn't until about 3 years ago that I started like ordering and finishing my beers. And I started with beer and we love craft beer. So we were really into the craft beers. I prefer a wheat beer. And that's just what I prefer. But liquor was harder for me to get into because I don't like the taste of liquor.
I'm the opposite. The really? Beer, I like still learning. Yeah. I had a bad beer experience as a teenager. Not that I drank it, but just the smell of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's totally valid. I mean, if the smell turns you off and it's going to be really hard to actually enjoy it. So right. It wasn't until, so we have a kegerator. And so we go get kegs of beer at like BevMo or Total Wine. And it wasn't until like we got in and we have a liquor cabinet fully stocked, but we don't use it. And so it wasn't until like our kegs ran out and we were like 1 month, our budget was tapped for kegs because kegs are like $100 a piece. And so we're like, well, we still want to drink, but we don't have any beer. So guess we're like busting into the liquor cabinet. And it was like from then on that we started like utilizing liquor. And when we get to like, you know, down, I'll tell you my story. It's going to connect. So we're going to talk about being blackout drunk. And that's when I'll tell you my story of shots.
Awesome. Fantastic.
So I don't have a first time story really other than the shot story. But that's kind of like my slow. I really slow, like I got in at the shallow end and I put a toe in here and a toe in there. And it helped that my husband is a never mouser. So he had plenty of experience and he wasn't ever going to push me. And so he just kind of like let me go at my own pace. So
yeah. Yeah. No, that's great.
Yep. So another thing that you and I talked about, Chloe, before we hit record is a first time drinking tip that I think we should mention is be mindful of the time in your life that you are branching out and exploring drinking. And I'm just going to add this caveat. You can do whatever the fuck you want at home and no one's going to see you.
So, right.
Stupid.
Well, I'm gonna I I will jump on that cat, and I don't have kids, but I will say, be mindful of your children though. If you've got kids and you're doing it at home, just be mindful of like what they're seeing and you know, what you want them to see and you know, what's appropriate there. And everyone has to make that choice for themselves. No judgment from me, just something to think about. Totally. As a non-parent, you can all hate me now.
No, but it's good advice. And I've heard that feedback from a lot of adults that kind of watched their parents be a little crazy and it was not a good experience as a child. So definitely be mindful of your kids. If you have kids at home, either make sure they're very asleep or just, you know, get a babysitter, take them to someone's house for the evening, and then you have, you know, the evening to explore. So I have gathered a lot of first-time drinking tips from seasoned drinkers. I explored a lot of post-Mormon forums where people have been drinking. I also hit up Reddit for some first-time drinking tips. So I have a pretty good list, and I wanted to kind of go through it with Chloe. And our plan is to go through the tips, and then also along the way, we also have a lot of, you know, experiences that we can tell you our experiences in terms of these tips. So it's going to be fun. So, are you ready?
I'm ready. Yes, okay. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Cheers. So,
cheers.
First of all, and Chloe kind of outlined a perfect example of this in her first time drinking story. Number one, drink with people you trust. Always. This is not just a first time tip, but an always tip. Especially when you're new, it's best to carefully check the environment and have a plan going in. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it's super important. And I wish I'd had this tip like a year ago or 2 years ago, not just when you're new, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's pretty easy to go over the line, especially if you don't totally know your limits, but at the same time, different bars, different strength of drinks, different whatever. Mm-hmm. And I definitely did not follow this one time. And I learned my lesson the very hard way. It was not a great experience. So I was with someone I didn't totally trust and I got pretty drunk and it did not end well. So nothing majorly traumatic, but I wish I could take that night back. So
Yeah.
Not just when you're new.
Yes. It's an always, all the time drinking tip is just always trust your environment, because alcohol has a way of, you know, taking away your inhibitions and your ability to kind of be in control of the environment. So just make sure that you're in a safe place and that way you can enjoy your evening. If you're in public or in a large gathering, make sure you have someone sober enough that you trust implicitly to keep you safe. And should you become too drunk, they can make sure that you make it home safely. So always have a buddy. And that's just another always, always, always tip. So we've talked about, like, if it's your first time and you want to experiment, like what's a good first time plan? And so I found some good first time plans, and this is something that, and this is kind of what I did and what Chloe did. So this is what I definitely recommend is if you want to plan on experimenting with alcohol, make a plan. Pick one friend you trust, either, you know, your spouse or a good friend or a very close, small circle of people that you implicitly trust. Just plan a chill evening where you pick up a supply of whatever you want to start drinking first. And then you sit your ass down and you take it slow and you put on a great movie. You sit by the fire, you have some great conversation, and you just kind of pace your way through it. And also keep a running total of how many times you've peed. And when you can no longer come up with the number in your head of how many times you've peed that night, that's when you know that you're good. You have reached your limit.
And along that line, have water. So this was a great thing that the guy I was drinking with the first time did, is he made sure I had a glass of water between each drink. It helps you in terms of just your ability to process the alcohol, but also drinking dehydrates you. And so it keeps you hydrated. It can help on the hangover end. But it just helps you pace yourself. Mm-hmm. As you go down that path, right? Yeah. Trying things out and seeing what your limits are.
Absolutely. That's a really good idea. Next, never accept a drink from someone at a bar. So that means like you're at a bar, you're mingling, and someone says, hands you, someone like not the bartender, it's like, hey, I got a drink for you, and hands you a drink. Safety tip, never a good idea to accept a drink from someone, whether it's an acquaintance or a stranger, especially a stranger. So what you do is if someone offers to buy you a drink at a bar, then you say, awesome, thank you, I'll take that drink. Can I get it from the bartender? And so that way they're still buying you a drink, but you are actually receiving it directly from the bartender, so you know that it's safe.
So on that note, and I love to share stories I've heard of people who have been drinking their whole lives who have these experiences, because it helps make me feel more normal. And like, it's not just a new drinker thing. It's just life. My friend was telling me a story about one of his friends the other night who had been out, and her date, the guy she was on a date with, but it was a first date, got her a drink from the bar, like went up to the bar and got her a drink. And it was, the first drink was fine. The second drink, she said, tasted a little strong and she felt pretty whatever. And he's like, what's interesting, and I didn't know this. I mean, I know people, I've heard the stories of people slipping things in drinks like roofies, but or whatever. Do they still call them roofies? I don't even know. Okay. But what he was saying is that people will pay the bartender to put more alcohol in the drink, like to make it extra strong, like tip them, which terrible people. And I hate people basically, but that's what he's like, I'm guessing that's what happened. And like, just don't, like he was saying as a guy, don't, as a woman, but this is true for men too, just don't ever take a drink from someone other than the bartender who's serving you and ordering it. I would even say ordering it yourself, right? Making sure there's no middleman involved.
Right. Totally. So never, again, along these same lines, never leave your drink unattended in a public, like in a bar or in a party setting. Just always keep, it's just a good rule of thumb to always keep your drink in your hand. Don't set it down and go to the bathroom. Don't set it down and go chit chat with someone. Just always keep it in your hand. That way, unless you're in that safe environment where you implicitly trust everyone and it's a really small crowd, just always keep your drink in your hand. Never leave a drunk friend unattended. Like the buddy system is real when you're going to a party, like don't ever leave your drunk friend behind. Someone needs to stay sober enough to pay attention. Like you need to set that up at the beginning and make sure that you have a friend that you trust enough to follow through with that. And then you can take turns like, hey, well, I got drunk this last time. Now it's your turn, you know, so that way you guys can stay safe.
I was at a karaoke night, probably 6 months ago. And we had a friend who was like doing no drink, whatever month, I don't know, sober October. So maybe it was October, something along those lines.
Yeah.
So because she was doing that, I felt very comfortable having more to drink because I knew she was going to be with me and that she was sober and she was going to make sure that I, you know, got home and all those things. Mm-hmm. And it's nice to like let loose every so often. The recovery is not super fun, but at least not at my age.
Right.
But it was nice. But I did have that buddy who like made sure. And of course, I didn't think I was all that drunk. And then she told me the stories and I remembered them. I was like, oh yeah, I guess I was pretty drunk. So yeah.
Yeah. And maybe this is a good place to plug in. If you have a designated driver with you in the group, then that you're good. And if you are in a driving situation where you're going to need a designated driver, then you kind of have a built-in safe person, as long as it's someone that you trust. Yes. Another thing, and I'll just plug this in now. The best way to avoid drunk driving is to not drive to the location where you're going to be drinking. It sounds super simple, but it works. Uber to the bar, and then you can Uber home from the bar. And then you don't have to worry about your car. You don't have to worry about having anxiety, making a bad judgment call when you're at the bar. Like, oh, I don't want to leave my car downtown, so I'm just going to drive it home. I'm fine. Like, just don't drive it there. Just Uber there and Uber back and you're good. So I think that's, or if you are going to someone's house, like make arrangements ahead of time. Be like, hey, I want to have a good night. I want to be comfortable. Do you mind if I crash on your couch and then drive home the next morning? Like most friends will be totally fine with that. And set it up ahead of time so that way you have the plan in place for when you may not be able to make the best judgment calls. And like maybe give your friend your keys.
I will also say, and I miss, this is when I really miss living. I've lived in cities the past 8 years, and now I'm in small town suburbia. Not as small town as you, but I'm out in the suburbs. And I miss just being able to walk places and Uber for cheap places. But so I also, just with dating or being over at a friend's house, I have rules for myself that I tell the people who I'm with and I make sure I follow. I stop drinking 2 hours before I'm leaving. Mm-hmm. And generally I'm not drunk to begin with, but like I stop drinking 2 hours before I'm leaving. I drink a ton of water. I know where I'm at completely. And if I feel any level of buzzed at all, I won't drive. I'm super paranoid. And I think that's the appropriate way to be. I think we should all be super paranoid about drunking. I'm totally sober right now about drunk driving, or driving while intoxicated. So I am like super vigilant about making sure that they're like, I've not had anything in my system for a while, and everyone's different. So for me, mm-hmm. 2 hours and a lot of water, as long as I've been eating, generally works. That may not work for you. Everybody's different.
So
you've got to figure yourself out. And I rarely do that, but I'm just saying, I try really hard to follow that, like spend the night, Uber, whatever.
Yeah. Rule. And I mean, as long as you plan ahead, like if you make a plan, then you can really enjoy yourself. Like that's the bottom line that I feel like if I don't make that plan ahead of time, then I can't have fun. And then that sucks. And I'm like, ugh. And so if I make the plan, find the babysitter, Uber over, make arrangements to spend the night, then I'm like, now I can have fun. And then it doesn't matter. And I don't have that like anxiety in my head. Like, oh, what if I have to do this? I have to stop drinking now. So just make a plan and then you can enjoy yourself.
Yep.
So when you're actually drinking, some tips are, don't start off with a bunch of shots. That's probably a really bad way to start your evening, because shots, depending on how much food you have in your stomach, this is another important thing to know about drinking. If you have food in your stomach, then it will, your body's already metabolizing the food. The alcohol won't hit you as hard, so you will be able to drink more. But keep in mind that the shot takes about 45 minutes to really hit you. So that's a long time. So if you take a shot and you wait like 5-10 minutes and you're like, I don't feel it yet. And then you take another shot and then it's like, 20 minutes and you're like, I still don't feel it. Let's do another one. And then you're like 3 shots in and then 45 minutes hits you and you're like, oh my God, like you're done. And that's like a really short night. So I recommend starting slow. Make sure that you've eaten. Bar food is great for getting you on a good evening, a good start, because starchy food, bar food, deep fried food helps you. It kind of holds the alcohol and you don't metabolize it as fast and it allows you to drink for a longer period of time. Do you have any experience with too many shots possibly?
Oh yeah. Along the lines of shots, just vodka Diet Coke, which is effectively a shot with a little bit of water, right? So lots of those. I ordered a double and then another double and then another double as I was eating and karaokeing. This is the night I was referring to. And like all of a sudden I went from being totally fine to like drunk.
Yeah.
Like very drunk. And so also just be mindful of like liquor versus beer versus wine and shots, mm-hmm. even if it's not a shot itself, if you're drinking mixed drinks and you're drinking them quickly, especially if they're mm-hmm. sugary drinks.
Yes.
Like you don't recognize how much you're drinking sometimes, and then it can just hit you and it's like, holy shit, mm-hmm. I had a lot to drink. And then 4 hours later, you're puking over a toilet and nobody wants that.
This is where it's probably a good idea to learn how shots affect you in a safe environment. So that way, you know, and then when you go out to a bar and you order drinks, you can count how many shots are in each mixed drink. So you know how many shots you're taking and you know how your body reacts to that many shots. It's just a good rule of thumb to learn your limits, because everybody's personal limit is going to be different.
Yes.
So I guess this might be a good place to talk about my first And this isn't even my first shot experience, but this was my first multiple shots in a 45 minute period experience. So this was during that time when our kegs were empty. We didn't want to spend the like $300-$400 to fill up our kegerator again. And so we were going through the liquor cabinet and we decided to Google mixed shots, which mixed shots are a lot of fun. And because we had tons of ingredients. And so we just started Googling and finding different recipes. And it was me and my husband's brother. It was just the three of us. And again, small crowd. And so we were just having a ton of fun. Like, ooh, what about this one? Ooh, what about this one? And so we were making them and making them. And of course, like when you slam shots that fast, you don't feel it until you're done. So we did six mixed shots in about a 45 minute period. And we were having a ton of fun. And then by the end of the 45 minute period, like I was like stumbling to bed. I was like, okay, I'm done. And like, luckily it was late enough in the night that, you know, our evening was over. So it wasn't ruined. And like, you know, I don't know if you've been in a relationship with a significant other and he's been like dropping the like, hey, let's do something fun tonight hints, you know, and he had been dropping the hints all night. So I was like, oh, that was on my mind. I'm like, hey, you know, like this is going to happen. So we go to bed and I remember like shedding the clothes and then like face first in bed. I was like, sorry, babe, done, face first. And then like we woke up in the next morning and I would like roll over and I was like, yeah, I'm so sorry you didn't get laid last night. Sorry, blah, blah, blah. And like he looks at me like big old wide eyes and I'm like, what? And he's like, you don't remember?
I got laid.
What? And he's like, you seemed really into it. And I was like, what? Like, I don't remember this at all. And so it was like this really surreal experience. I'm like, did that really happen? And he's like, you were really into it. You were making all the appropriate noises, all the appropriate sounds. Like, you were into it. And I was like, I believe you. Because I was like ready for it all night. But then I passed out. Blackout drunk is, if you've ever heard someone say, like, I blacked out. Blackout drunk is a really interesting phenomenon because once you're blackout drunk, no one else around you knows that you're blacked out. You appear to be completely conscious. And that's kind of a dangerous thing, especially if you're in a party scene, because once you've blacked out, your brain turned off. Your consciousness, your awareness is turned off, but you're still on this like autopilot basically, where you're still walking and talking and appearing to everyone else that you're conscious. So as a word of caution, this is another good point or another good place to say, to push, make sure you always trust the people in your environment when you're drinking, because this could happen when you make a bad judgment call, like taking six shots in 45 minutes. And, you know, luckily I was with my spouse and yeah. So, you know, I was already totally fine with any activity that would have happened and I trust him. But if I wasn't, then that's, you know, when bad situations can occur.
Absolutely. And what's really tricky is like your spouse didn't actually know, like you were, you know, in terms of the blackout experience, he didn't actually know that you weren't lucid.
Right.
And that's where it gets tricky too, because you can really feel like in a dating situation, if you're not totally into it, you might be physically, your body might be like, yes, this seems like a great thing. And you're on autopilot, mm-hmm. but you can wake up feeling really violated, even though the person on the other side really thought he or she had consent. And so just drinking with people you're comfortable with and making sure you trust them. And even if they are trustworthy, once you've hit that blackout point, like it can be pretty dicey because they don't know that that's where you're at. And so just basically drink responsibly is what we're saying.
And this is an excellent point to plug that a drunk consent is not consent ever, period, for the rest of eternity. Drunk consent is not consent. If you're going to be going
absolutely
on a where you're planning on drinking, always have the conversation while completely sober what the plan is for the night. If you are okay with sexual activity, then you need to make that clear at the beginning. And if you are not okay, then you need to set the ground rules up front. And you better be on a date with someone who will respect those boundaries.
Yes, I was going to say, and if you feel like the person won't respect those boundaries, maybe rethink dating. them.
Well, yeah, definitely drinking with them. And
but I mean dating period.
Right. Yeah. Like if you don't get a good vibe after you sober set the boundaries, bail.
Yeah.
So, okay. Where were we?
I think next we're at staying hydrated.
Okay. And you've hinted at this, Chloe. So thank you for hinting. It's a very, very important part of drinking is to always stay hydrated.
Yes. And I will say, I'm just going to speaking from my own experience, there's sometimes when I don't want to be hydrated because I'm after a buzz, and that diluting, you know, with water or liquid or Gatorade, right? Hydrating can slow that process down. Mm-hmm. I don't think that that's the best approach, what I just said, to be after the buzz without staying hydrated. So drink water, and none of us are hydrated enough, period. Like there's research behind it, but we don't drink enough anyway, water. So drinking in advance. I drink a Gatorade before you go to bed, keep it on your nightstand. Yeah. The hangover experience will be so much more pleasant, i.e. you may not even have a hangover if you appropriately hydrate throughout the night, before you go to bed, before you start drinking, just basically. And the rule that I've started to follow is most of the time is to make sure I have like a glass of water or some like Gatorade, whatever. Generally, it's water for me. A glass of water between drinks. So I don't go from drink to drink to drink. That works for me. That tends to keep me hydrated. It also makes it, because I'm a drink downer, even before I ever started drinking, like I can down 44 ounces of Diet Coke in like 10 minutes. I just down my drinks. And so that helps me kind of slow down a little bit. And it also makes it a lot cheaper if you're drinking, like I like to drink throughout my meals. Mm-hmm. And if I'm going glass of wine, glass of water, glass of wine, that's a lot cheaper than glass of wine, glass of wine, glass of wine.
Yeah.
So there's some cost benefits there too, but for sure. It makes a big difference in terms of that hangover impact and also just staying in control and being a lot more present in terms of the drinking experience.
Yes, absolutely. So yeah, you completely covered that. Staying hydrated will help you feel less hungover the next day because part of the reason, I found this little tidbit out that's frightening. The reason why your head is pounding in the morning is because alcohol is a diuretic. And so when you're dehydrated, the reason why your head hurts is because your brain is being sucked dry of liquid. And so that's
all I ever need.
Your brain hurts because it's thirsty. Like,
all I need is those visuals and it'll totally change my behavior now. Right? I was not aware of that, but it makes sense. And if you imagine like your brain cells just shriveling up because they're so dried out, that's kind of scary to think about.
Yeah. Right? So now you know. Yeah. When you have a dehydrated headache, especially a hungover dehydrated headache, your brain is like,
yeah.
Like picture the mummy
shriveling. Totally. Right. But it's your brain.
But it's your brain.
But it's your brain.
Okay. Another good thing, like you mentioned keeping some sort of liquid on your nightstand. So that way when you wake up in the night, you can always rehydrate immediately and then go back to sleep because sleep is very important for healing your body, especially after drinking activities. And eat a piece of bread before you go to bed because the starches will help to absorb the alcohol and then your body can metabolize it at a more regular rate. So eat a piece of bread, take your favorite.
I was going to say, I also take ibuprofen before, which if you're drinking enough water and kind of following the rules, generally I don't need the ibuprofen, so I'm cheating a little bit. So it's good to think about the fact that the ibuprofen is masking the fact that your brain is dehydrated. So,
which is scary.
Now I may skip the ibuprofen because I maybe want to know what's going on.
You need the signal.
I learned that something new.
You need the signal that your brain is dying.
Yes, totally.
I mean, if it's muscle aches, that's different. But if it's a headache, I would address that.
Yeah.
So next tip, every body, body and gender metabolizes alcohol differently. So don't ever get into these drinking, like, I'm going to keep up with her, I'm going to keep up with him, because everyone metabolizes different. It's never going to be fair, especially like this person may have a greater body mass index than you. They could be male and you're female, and or they could be more experienced with their alcohol and you're not. So just don't ever get into those. Just don't.
On the same note, don't judge people who are drinking more than you, because I will say I've definitely had people be like, whoa, you've had a lot. And I'm like, well, I'm not a small girl to begin with. I also ate a meal. I've also been drinking water. So like, just back off a little bit. Like, just know everyone needs to know their limits and figure that out. So don't try and keep up, and also don't judge people who drink more than you, because they might not be alcoholics. They might just have a different body.
So don't judge people who know how to drink their alcohol.
There you go. Or you're a lightweight and your body doesn't metabolize it well, and that's just going to be the story of your life. And that's great, because then you only have to have one drink to feel great, whereas I need like three or four.
It's a lot cheaper. It's cheaper to be a lightweight. A lot cheaper.
Totally. So true. On every body metabolizing and reacting differently. Mm-hmm. I get super frustrated because I get super red faced. So I don't drink a ton. Especially not with, like, I just, right, everybody's different. So like, mm-hmm. just pay attention. Know what happens with you.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't let anyone pressure you into drinking. Drinking is a social activity, so there's often a lot of peer pressure and peer encouragement to drink, but you can always say no, and do not let anyone push you after you've decided that your answer is no. Again, that's a good time to bail if someone's pressuring you after you've clearly said no.
Also, if you need an out, like, I used to think that it was only weirdo Mormons who didn't drink, but lots of people go through like months where they're trying to like not drink or just get off of it, right? Mm-hmm. There are lots of things that rhyme with a different end of months, but you can also just say, oh, I'm doing a dry whatever month, right? Mm-hmm. Sober October, dry July, like there's lots of different things. So mm-hmm. if you just really don't want to drink and people aren't leaving you alone, A, I'd say get new friends, but also you can come up with, you can just say, look, I'm not drinking, period. Uh-huh. Right? Yeah. Like, it's all good.
Totally. Or I'm the designated driver for blah, blah, blah. And then they'll leave you alone.
Totally.
They should leave you alone.
Totally. Or I have a medical condition or I take a medication and I can't, I mean, I'm not encouraging lying, but there are definitely, I have a friend who is on a medication and she can't drink because of the medication, right? Like there's lots of different reasons people don't drink. So don't feel self-conscious about not drinking.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
Reasons to not drink. You may just not like it, and that's okay too.
Yeah. Especially at the beginning.
Yeah.
And you also brought up medications. This is another important thing. As Mormons, we are used to always going to the doctor and always answering no for the do you drink question. And so we aren't as aware when we're taking medications of what medications are going to interact with alcohol. That's just not something that's on our radar ever, because we have gone through life with this assumption that we never drink. So if you're starting to drink and you're taking any sort of medication, as even this happened to me with an antibiotic. I was taking an antibiotic for like a 2-week period, didn't notice that it had an alcohol interaction, started drinking with my husband around the campfire one night. After one drink, I was puking into the fire after one drink. And he was like, he got real worried. And then that's when we figured out, like, he had to literally carry me up out of the backyard and put me in bed after one drink. And then that's when we figured out what had happened. So be very careful, because medical, you know, medications can have a very, very quick and scary effect if there's an interaction. So just always be aware.
And maybe this is also a good time to say, make sure you tell your doctor and are honest about what's going on with you. Yeah. I had an interesting experience where I had to have an endoscopy, and my sister-in-law was coming to be my person who was there. And thankfully she got there a little later than when the doctor started asking me questions. I would have been honest, but But I'm glad I didn't have to be honest in front of her because she doesn't necessarily know that I drink at the time. But it is not worth your pride to not tell the truth about how much you drink. And know that like doctors assume you're telling them half as much as you actually drink, but still try and be totally honest.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah. That's actually, this is total side tangent, but now that I'm actually drinking and my husband has always drunk. And so we got in a conversation one time because we were both like, we don't see the doctor a whole lot, but then you go through, you see a new doctor and you have to fill out that questionnaire about how often you drink. And like, I was like, if I was honest, I was like tapping out like way soon into the, like the, you know, blah, 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 or more. And there was nothing after that. And I'm like it was like six or more. And I was like, that's less than one drink a night per week. Like that's one, I can only have one beer at dinner six nights of the week. And that automatically makes me a heavy drinker. Like, and I feel like it's because they like, they factor in that everybody's lying. I'm like, that's not fair.
Right. But
yeah. So
it is what it is.
Yeah. I would just maybe have an honest conversation with your doctor outside of this questionnaire and be like, hey, this is how much I drink for real. I'm being honest with you right now. Is that a problem or blah, 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 whatever. And just be honest. Back to the blackout drunk. I forgot to include this, but this is also good to know. In addition to knowing your limits with alcohol, like with shots, like maybe have, you know, figure out how shots affect you in a safe environment. Also, another good thing to know is how your behavior changes when you are consuming alcohol.
I was just going to say, not just when you're consuming alcohol, but different types of alcohol.
Yeah.
Because like for me, tequila is not the same as vodka for me in terms of like my behavior and how it affects me and how I feel afterwards. And so keep going with this because it's a great theme.
That's interesting. So yeah, are you, do you get super flirty? And is a super flirty you the personality you want to bring to the party, this particular party or scene, whatever? Just keep that in mind. Are you an angry buzzed? Do you like become emotional and like, does your stress come out? Like, just make sure that you know what your behavior is like drink with people that can reflect that back to you, maybe either in the moment or the next day, be like, hey, you were doing this and this and this. Like, it's just good to know what you're going to be like when you're drinking behavior wise.
Yes. And I think asking for that feedback from people when you're first starting out is really important because you're not always totally connected to how you're behaving, right? When you're drinking. And so you may not realize how angry you sound or how flirty you're being or what you're putting across. Again, let's just reiterate that drunk consent is never consent.
Amen.
Right? Good to not put yourself in that situation also.
Yes. Yes. If you know that you're flirty, then you could absolutely be sending the wrong signals to people that you haven't put up that boundary with because you didn't know that you should. But your drunk flirty self had a different agenda that you weren't ready for. So again, you know, make sure you're in a safe environment, know your behavior, always play it safe. Let's see. Oh, be sure you know why you're drinking and don't drink when you're angry or sad or alone. This is another just good safe rule of thumb. If you're looking to drink to numb feelings,
escape,
or escape, then that might be something that's important to look at. Just be aware of it and maybe have the courage to address that, those emotions in a more healthy way. Caveat, I'm a mom and sometimes if I like I'm stressing out with the kids and I've learned that if I just have a glass of wine or a beer at dinner time, then all of a sudden like, I'm like, oh, I can be a chill mom now. And like it does diffuse a lot of emotions, but that's like, I don't know, that's a little bit more healthy than like going for the bottle specifically, you know, to deaden emotions.
And I've had this conversation with my therapist as well. I like to talk about my therapist. but we were talking about just the likelihood of like becoming an alcoholic, and there's lots of different factors, but he was saying one of the big factors is like, have you learned to cope with emotions without alcohol? And so one of the benefits of being a late bloomer, quote unquote, when you start drinking is that generally you've learned healthier coping mechanisms, yeah. Generally, not always, mm-hmm. But frequently. And so the risk is lower, but I do think it's so important to think through that and say, oh, am I drinking right now because I'm trying to, like you said, numb my feelings? Mm-hmm. That said, I definitely occasionally have a glass of wine with dinner when I'm at home by myself, but it's very much, again, awareness. I'm not escaping anything. It's just a nice, like, unwind. Mm-hmm. Nice at the end of the night. What I will say there though, is I think there's a myth out there that a glass of wine can help you sleep. It may help you get to sleep, but I have a neurologist and we were talking about just sleep patterns, mm-hmm. and it may help you get to sleep, but your sleep is not going to be as restful or health restorative if you have a yeah. drink before you go to bed. So basically do some research too. Don't yeah. just believe everything you hear out there.
You sent me that podcast. That was an interview with Joe Rogan and a sleep.
Yes.
And he's,
but also I was just going to say my neurologist, like my actual neurologist confirmed that same thing to me because yeah. we were talking about sleep. So anyway, yes, keep going.
It sets back your REM sleep, which REM sleep is your restorative sleep. If you have a glass of alcohol before bed, it actually sets back your melatonin peak, which initiates your REM sleep, 3 hours is what they said in the podcast. Yeah. Like that sucks. That means you're basically yeah. losing 3 hours of restorative sleep. So you may be asleep, but you're not getting all the healing restorative properties in your sleep. So it does. It's yes. really not good for your sleep. Nightcaps are really not,
I think,
as cool as they sound.
Yeah. I think you should link to that podcast in your show notes too, because I am now like on this sleep kick.
Yes.
And it's amazing. I feel the need for less alcohol now that I'm getting enough sleep.
Imagine that.
Yes.
You know, self-medicating in order to sleep better. You just naturally yes. are getting yes. there.
Yes. It's great.
Okay. Now let's talk about drunk texting.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Please.
So rules of thumb. Did you have some stories first before we get started?
I have I don't have any terrible stories, but I've definitely used the drunk text excuse to text something I really wanted to say anyway, but I wasn't sure how it was going to land. And I don't think that's super healthy emotionally. Well, also that, I mean, I was drunk, so it wasn't like it was dishonest.
Okay.
I was actually drunk, but I was fully lucid and knew what I was doing. It wasn't like, you know, whatever. So I think this is a fantastic rule or tip, I should say, not rule, but tip. Yes.
So
hide your phone.
Hide your phone, disable social media when you start to feel yourself lose control. And trust me, sober you will thank drunk you for putting your phone away. Trust me.
Yes. And especially if you've got some tough tension in any relationships, mm-hmm. or if you're dating and feeling insecure in any way about the dating situation.
Uh-huh. Yes. Or you're in a spot where you're just thinking about some person that you've recently broken up with, or, you know.
Or broke up with 3 years ago and are just feeling especially lonely. Whatever.
Uh-huh. So just enjoy the moment and don't give yourself the out to make like lasting bad judgment calls when it comes to texting or social media. Just put it away and enjoy the moment. You don't need your phone. You don't.
Nope.
All right. Different true. Drinks have different effects. We've kind of talked about that. Beer has a lot lower, much lower alcohol content than any sort of mixed drink or liquor.
And it's super filling, so you yes. just don't drink as much of it as quickly.
I've actually,
at least not early on.
Yeah, I've actually never in my life gotten a buzz off of beer. Well, I guess if I am completely on an empty stomach, like I haven't eaten all day, and I chug it real fast, and I'm dehydrated, that's the only time I will ever get a buzz off of beer. And both of those things, those situations, I don't recommend.
Which you just convinced me that I don't need to ever figure out how to like beer, because I don't like it. And if it's not going to give me a little bit of a buzz, what's the point? I'm going to stick with my Diet Coke. Thanks.
Totally. Yeah. When I drink beer, it's because I am appreciating the flavor, not because I'm trying to get a buzz. Hey,
that was my barf face.
Beer, okay.
Lots of people like beer. Lots of people.
But yeah,
here's my tip. Don't put it, if you want a quickly cool beer, don't put it in a freezer.
Yeah.
Especially not in a garage in the middle of the summer, where when it explodes, your whole garage then smells like skunky beer. Because that happened during my childhood. A friend, a sibling, I don't want to out anyone, but there was a 6-pack of beer put in our freezer in the garage. And to this day, I can't stand the smell of it.
Just ew.
Can't handle it. Yeah. Yeah.
So there is some wisdom to the beer before liquor moniker. Have you heard that saying?
Liquor before beer, never fear. Beer before liquor, never sicker.
Yeah, or get,
that's what I've heard.
Get sicker quicker, something like that. Liquor before beer, you're in the clear. Beer before liquor, get sicker quicker, is the way I heard it. So basically there is actually scientific backing to that saying. And what it is that beer has a lower alcohol content. So it's a less of a shock to your system. And so it actually has it, and beer is a sedative. And so it relaxes your blood capillaries. And so they open and they become more absorbent. I'm talking like I'm a scientist, so feel free to anyone call me on my bullshit right now. Beer opens your capillaries and allows the alcohol to be absorbed into the bloodstream more quickly. So on the flip side, if you start with shots, then the liquor is such a higher alcohol content that it shocks the system. And then your body basically is able to set up the defenses it needs to kind of dampen the absorption of the alcohol. And so that's what happens, is if you start with beer and then you start doing shots, you're going to get drunker faster because your body is already set up to receive that alcohol. Whereas if you start with shots, it'll kind of close up shop and it will self-moderate better than if you had started with beer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it sounds right. Sure. I just know the moniker.
Yeah.
The little story.
I am not a doctor.
Right. Right.
Heyo. So remember how I just said that I am not a doctor? I hope you believe me. I'm not a freaking doctor. So this is where I get to tell you that I was wrong. And here I go eating crow and telling you that that was a myth, like a legit myth. And here's the truth. According to the New York Times, which I actually found this information on vinepair.com, the myth originated from the way we digest alcohol. Carbonated drinks like beer and sparkling wine can irritate the lining of the stomach, thereby increasing the rate of alcohol absorption. Then there's the fact that people who have had liquor to start with tend to drink less beer. People tend to progress from beer to liquor, so when they get sick at the end of the night, they blame the last thing they drank. However, there is something to be said about starting your night with liquor and transitioning to beer, as opposed to beginning with your favorite lager. As Dr. Carrie Peterson wrote for Today, with any alcohol, your inhibition decreases, which often leads to drinking more. So if you start with a beverage that has a higher alcohol content, your inhibition goes down more quickly and you tend to drink more. In other words, regardless of what you started drinking with, your inhibitions will be lowered by the time you get to your second and third and fourth drink, and you'll be drinking more eagerly. Sticking with lower calorie options such as a 5 to 6% alcohol by volume beer, as opposed to beverages with hard liquor, will monitor the amount of alcohol going into your system. Hopefully. Just remember, pacing is key. We are all adults here, and don't be that guy or gal. Okay, back to the good times where I spout off like I know what I'm talking about. Enjoy.
I have just, well, maybe when we get to the suggestions on tasting drinks, I've got a few more things. But
yeah.
Next one,
We might have to do this in two ready? Parts.
We might.
We have a lot.
We won't
to
get too crazy, but next one. If you feel like you're going to throw up, just do it. You're not going to win that fight. Just Never. Get the alcohol out. I have exactly one time gotten drunk enough where I felt like I was going to throw up, and 100%, I didn't try and not throw up. I just went and let it happen. Thankfully, I was at home, and like I was on my own toilet, my own bathroom, but it was like there was no recovering from it. It just yeah. was going to happen. Yeah. So I 100% am there, and it gets the alcohol out of your system, and that's your body's way of protecting you, right? We throw up for a reason. So
right. And don't be afraid to not drink water, because a lot of times if you actually like have the flu, it sucks to drink water after you throw up because it'll just make you throw up again. Do it. Just do it.
Yeah.
It's going to eventually make you feel better to be rehydrated. You're going to need that hydration.
Yes.
And your body still needs to rid itself of any excess alcohol that's making you feel sick.
Yeah. And then take note of how much you drank and what you were doing and try to never do that again because it's yeah. miserable.
Take notes.
Yes.
Okay. And I think yes. that's the end of our safety tips. So now we can get into the like, so what do we drink? So did you yes. have some tips?
So I've got a few. One, as I mentioned, taking a cocktail class, and that was so useful. And if you're at all intimidated by doing this and thinking like other people are going to totally know and I have no idea what I'm doing, I was in a class of 12 people, and at least half the people there said they were taking it because they just didn't feel like they knew very much about mixed drinks and whatever. And it was great. So I definitely am all for taking classes. I also would say, talk to the bartender, like maybe not the bartender. I mean, I think it's valuable to go to a bar that's known for being like a good bar. So maybe not the bar at like your local TGI Fridays, although there's still bartenders. But I will say like go to like a good drinking bar and talk to the bartender and tell them, just say, hey, I'm new to drinking. Generally, they are super happy to mix you something that's like tailored to your taste. Mm-hmm. So that you can try things. They're not going to think it's ridiculous. Like I've never had a bartender be like, oh my gosh, they're usually pretty excited to help you experience more flavors. Uh-huh. And like a really good craft cocktail. And so that would be one of my tips too, is just be curious and ask questions and mm-hmm. learn.
Oh, and something that I meant to mention that is really important to know when it comes to hangover and hangover prevention is the more carbs you have in your system, the stronger potential for hangover that you're going to have. So if you're drinking super sweet, sugary drinks, those are like instant hangover recipe right there. So, and that's when it's good, if you're going to have one of those super sugary drinks, to always follow it up with a glass of water to kind of help your body flush out all of that sugar. And, so just know that if you do a whole night of sugary drinks, you're pretty much guaranteed to be hungover. And be yeah. careful when it comes for like reaching for those gummy worms and, you know, things like that, because any additional sugar that you put into your system while you're drinking is going to have a negative effect on you the next day.
Great tip. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I knew that sugar drinks are not great, but I didn't yeah. realize the hangover implication.
Absolutely. Instant hangover, because sugar also is, you know, it's going to dehydrate you. Sugar makes your body work harder to get rid of it and metabolize it. It's just, sugar's just yeah. not good for you. And so if you're already overloading your system with alcohol, then you should, you know, if you have the presence or the, you know, if you can make that choice to say, okay, I'm going to take it easy on sugar because I would like to enjoy alcohol and not feel like dog shit the next day, then, you know, it's a good idea.
Yeah. The other thing I learned is if beers are on tap or ciders are on tap, I really like ciders, which are, you know, fruit-based beverages for people who don't know what ciders are. And usually the alcohol content's pretty low, somewhere between 4.5% and 8%. But they will for sure get you a taste of those drinks at like nice okay. bars. Uh-huh. So if you want to try something, just say, hey, can I try this one? As long as it's on tap and it's not a bottle or a can, right? Because they can't just open that for you to taste. But if it's on tap, they will have you taste. So great to go to like a brewery or like there's a cider house in Seattle that I love where they will let you taste whatever, and they have flights too, but they'll also just let you have a taste.
Nice. Oh, this is a good tip. I also, if we're thinking about beers, IPA. So if it's an IPA, which stands for India Pale Ale, a lot of the ales, especially the India Pale, the IPA kind, are going to be have a very high hop content, and hops is what they use to brew beer. Hops is what's going to make it more bitter. So if you're trying beer for the first time and your friends are big IPA fans and they give you one of their beers, you're not going to like it, period, unless you're a total freak who also loves IPAs. I hate IPAs, can you tell?
Lagers and stouts.
Yes. Lagers.
Those are my, stouts. Those are the ones I can handle.
Yes. Or wheat beers are going to be very mellow and good. And I mean, if you want to just ease into it, like you can start with a Bud Light, but it's really super watery. I wouldn't recommend it, but every once in a while, this is terrible advice, but if I'm dehydrated, then a Bud Light actually is kind of refreshing and nice. Or I could just have some water, and I'm sure it would be way
better. Water's good.
But
yes. It,
just, you know. So yeah, don't start with IPAs. Start with a lager, a golden ale, or a wheat beer, and those will be much more likely to, you'll be much more likely to have a good experience.
Do you know, just out of curiosity, because I've had Guinness and I really liked it. That's like, I mean, it's like a darker beer.
Yes.
But I don't know what that would be classified as.
I think Guinness is a stout. I have
I a think beer so, right?
that I should, I we did an episode
you
on
should.
That. I'll include it in the okay. show notes. We have a beer Great. 101 episode on Mormon Happy Hour. I'll put it in the show notes, and he answers all of those questions because I don't remember.
I was going to say again, when I was in Scotland, I asked, I have a brother who was a bartender in his past life and was talking to him, and he knows that I drink, and he's like, you got to have a Guinness when you're in like the UK. And I was like, well, isn't it Irish? But whatever. I had one and I liked it. I did like that. So there are definitely some beers out there that I like, but I think it's a great tip to go IPAs. I'm not there.
No,
I don't know that I'm ever going to be there, and it's okay.
Yeah, totally fine. I really like a peanut butter stout. There's milk stouts. There's
chocolate
stout. Yes. Chocolate peanut butter stouts there. They have a heavier mouth feel. They feel a little bit thicker. They're dark beers. So that might be something you'd have to ease into. You probably aren't going to have more than one glass a night because they're heavier beers, but I think they're very,
heavy.
Very
easy. Yeah. Super good.
Yeah.
So we've covered kind of cocktails, liquor, we've covered beer. What about wine?
Oh, wine. I am just starting my wine journey. You probably drink more wine than I do, Chloe. But before we move on from mixed drinks, I did want to share my hangover-free mixed drink that my husband and I, this is all we drink. So I can definitely get like fall asleep drunk without having a hangover the next day as often as I like, because the recipe, and I've shared this a bunch, but something we've learned is to use a flavored seltzer as the base for our drink. And the nice thing about that is that it's basically a can of water going into your mixed drink. And that keeps us, you know, in addition to remembering to drink water while we're drinking, just having a can of water in our mixed drink really helps us to stay hydrated, and we don't generally feel hungover at all the next day. So they come in all different flavors. Just go down your grocery store aisle. There's a million brands, a million flavors. So just look for your favorite flavor, pick up a box of it. And then I use a liqueur to sweeten it if you need that extra sweet, and then a liquor to mix in. So our rule of thumb is one can of seltzer, one
12
shot.
Ounce.
It's just a
regular 8 ounce
soda can. What's that?
12 ounce.
Okay. So yeah, 12 ounce seltzer can of whatever your favorite flavor is. And then a shot of whatever liquor you want to use. My husband likes gin. I hate gin. Gin has a very herbal-y juniper berry taste that I don't favor. I use vodka or rum. My new favorite is coconut rum. And then if you need that sweetener, that's when you use a liqueur or a schnapps, because it will give you a sweet and a flavor.
Do you do half a shot of the liqueur or a full shot?
I do a half a shot of liqueur because I don't have the Mormon sweet tooth. I happen to have, like, my body doesn't react well to sugar. So I do a half a shot of the liqueur. My husband does 2 shots of liquor to 1 shot liqueur per can. So his drinks are a little heavier. So find the ratio that works for you. I also am a lot smaller than my husband.
Yes. And he's a dude. On that note, my favorite at-home mixed drink that kind of helped me ease in a little bit, especially for our, you know, Sodalicious type loving, your Sodalicious loving listeners. And you mentioned coconut rum. So Malibu, which is coconut rum, Diet Coke, and lime. I like half a lime. So again, a shot. And if you don't know what a shot is, like, a shot glass will give you a shot. Mm-hmm. There's also little measuring tools you can get. One of my favorite gifts I got for my 40th birthday was from a guy I was dating at the time, which was this whole little collection of drink mixing stuff. He knew I'd taken this cocktail class. So it was great to get a little, I don't even know what they're called, the little, like, shot measures, but some good paraphernalia you can purchase that can easily be hidden away in drawers.
Yeah, or the shakers. The shakers are also good to pick up.
I got a shaker. He got me a stir. I got the whole thing. It was lovely. And then we broke up and I didn't get him anything for his 40th birthday. But oh well.
Nice.
So yes, it's a truly dirty Diet Coke. Like, you can order a dirty Diet Coke at Sonic and it will be the coconut flavored syrup, lime, and Diet Coke. But an actual dirty Diet Coke is the coconut rum. Yeah.
Yes.
And I like Malibu.
And this is another thing that I wanted to mention is there's something about lime and alcohol. Like, if you've noticed, there's often a citrus element to a lot of mixed drinks. And the reason for that is that citrus, especially lime, in my opinion, has this magical ability to completely mask the alcohol flavor. So if tasting alcohol is definitely not your thing, then, like, if you can taste the vodka in your drink and you're like, nah, this is gross, then squeeze a lime into it. Like, cut either a quarter or a half of a lime, squeeze it into your drink, and magically it's refreshing, it's crisp, and it doesn't taste like liquor. So,
well, and the science behind it is that acid cuts the bitter, and you get in the liquor, you get a lot of those bitter flavors. So limes in a Corona. I said I don't like beer. I did try a Corona the other night because I've got a couple family members who have loved Corona in the past and got a recommendation. Delicious. It was great.
It's very good.
But I put in 4 lime slices.
In one?
A lot of lime. Yeah, it was great. It's delicious. Yeah. Chips and salsa, a Corona with lime. It was amazing.
Fuck yeah. It's the tits, man.
Yeah.
So good.
So good.
Nice.
So just on wine, and I'm not going to profess myself to be like a super into wine connoisseur, but here are my tips for starting if you do want to start. And you would share, I think we've talked about this, you would share the same tips, but don't start with red generally. It's especially if you're used to drinking like sodas, as many of us are. It's weird to drink something that's room temperature. It's a lot stronger flavor, a lot more bitter. We're not used to those flavors. So I would say don't start with red wines, with the exception maybe of the red that you have recommended in the past that you had, the sweet one. I'll talk about that in a sec. But yes, the Stella Rosa. So I haven't tried that yet. But Moscato is a great place to start. It is like, it's like an alcohol tin, like, it's grape juice, basically. Let's just call it what it is. It's grape juice that has a little alcohol in it.
It's like a juice box.
But it's delicious. It is a juice box. A boozy juice box. Yep. But that's a great place to start. Moscato, and then some of the sweeter white wines. And you can ask if it's a sweet or a dry wine, but Pinot Grigio is another good place to start. Rieslings are sweet as well. Mm-hmm. And again, I think wine tastings are really useful. I would stick with white wine tastings and start there, and then ask no one, like, unless you're like a sommelier, people most people don't know that much about wine. And so just ask the person, ask the bartender, ask the server, whatever. Mm-hmm. And again, I would say maybe don't ask the server at like your local Cheesecake Factory, but nope. Like go to an actual nice restaurant that has wine selections and a list and ask them.
Yeah.
It's a great place to go. The other thing is there's some apps that you can get. I also got this super cute little book at like a bookstore that's 30, I don't even remember, but it's like 33 wines, but it just is a space for you to write things down because that's what I would taste something that I really liked and then never remember what it was. So I've started to just keep track and note like whether or not I like it, what I liked about it. I'm not trying to become some super expert in wine. I just want to know what I want to order when I'm in a restaurant. So there are my tips there. I have zero red wine drinking tips because I am not there yet. So there we go.
And something that I learned is that if you find a wine that you like, then figure out on the bottle what kind of grapes it's brewed from. What type, they have types of wines that are specifically brewed from a certain type of grape. And once you find a grape variety that you like, then you will most often like that variety of grapes in a lot of different brands and wineries. You know you like that grape, then you can find other wines that you like, which I wasn't even aware that that was a thing until I started drinking wine.
And sparkling wines are really a great place to start too.
Yeah.
And mixed drinks with wine. So like a mimosa, which is right, champagne mixed with orange juice or different types of mimosas that are out there, but good kind of, again, easing your way into wine.
So before we close, you mentioned way early and I forgot to mention it, but different types of liquor and alcohol are going to give you different types of feelings. And
yes.
For Christmas Eve, with my husband's family, we got a $150 bottle of Don Julio's 1942 tequila. And
holy crap.
Yeah. So tequila is kind of one of those rough liquors to get into a lot. Like people, it's often that liquor that people smell it and they're instant. They don't even have to taste it. And they're like, bleh. Because either you take tequila, either you love it or you absolutely hate it. So it really would behoove you to get a good quality tequila to ensure that you're going to have a positive tequila experience.
And no, 100%. Like there's a difference in the price range. So just know if you're going for the cheapest and tequila, especially, I think the same thing with like whiskey, but just know if you're going for the cheapest stuff, it is going to be very different potentially than the more expensive stuff.
Oh yeah. That's another tip. Like if you're going to the grocery store and you want to start a liquor, there's the bottom shelf, mid shelf, top shelf, like top shelf is a thing. And so my rule of thumb is buy as much as you can afford quality wise, put your money in as quality as you can. Don't ever, ever buy anything from the bottom shelf, especially if it comes in a plastic bottle, you leave that at the store. Don't even.
My Malibu is in a plastic bottle, I think.
Well, see, that's different because sometimes they put good quality liquor in a plastic bottle so you can take it to the beach, you know. They don't allow black bottles at the beach.
So, that's true. Okay.
But don't get like Fleischmann's vodka on the bottom shelf because that's the shit I use to clean I use that to clean my house. I don't use it to drink.
So. Right.
So tequila. So we finished the bottle of tequila for Christmas Day. And that was the, like, I don't get hungover very often because we drink a lot of, you know, seltzer mixed drinks. But that was, I literally took 2 days to get over from that hangover. And that night I puked so much. I puked for like 3 hours straight. So, and there was nothing left. It was just this, my body was like, so I still like tequila, but I'm now taking like a 6 month sabbatical from tequila because I overdid myself for Christmas.
Yep. I can imagine.
So
I've not been there, but I mean, I've been puking, but not with tequila. Just on that with flights as well. Like I was at a Mexican restaurant and they did flights of different types of Mexican liquor. So it was like tequila and I'm going to butcher the name, so I'm not even going to say them, but two other types of Mexican, mezcal. And then there was one other type, but they brought out these flights so you could taste them. And with liquor, one other tip is adding a little bit of water to it, or people will get on the rocks, which does the same thing. And if you dilute it a little bit, it changes the flavor profile slightly, or significantly, depending. And that can be, that was a tip I learned during this whiskey tasting, was like add a little bit of water and then different flavors come out and it becomes super exciting, like super interesting.
Just a small amount. And so it's good to try it without water. And then try it with water and compare the flavors and see which you prefer on all kinds of different liquors.
Yeah. Super, super and interesting.
And these are like the sipping liquors. So like a whiskey or a scotch or a bourbon, like sipping whiskeys or sipping liquors, I should say. Sipping, I think we covered so much. There's so much that we didn't cover because the topic is so much to say about it.
I know. I always joked when I was still very Mormon and not drinking, was like, oh, I'm glad that I don't have one more thing to spend money on, because I get into like, I get super into cheeses or like, I just get super into whatever. And again, like kind of going down this path, I'm like, how far do I want to dip into this? Cause it gets expensive. So
yes, it does. You know. It really does. Well, thank you so much for covering this all with me. I think I finally made
it. You're welcome.
I found the perfect person to do this with.
It was very fun to talk about. I love it.
So listeners, if you have any other questions that we didn't cover, please like mention it in the Facebook group, Instagram, email at mormonhappyhour@gmail.com. There's tons of places, ways to get a hold of us, start a conversation, and let's
Colleen go. Has a voicemail.
We do.
You can call and leave a voicemail message.
Are you ready? Get a pen. It is 435-494-1427. That's right. So ask away, or if you have a great story, that's another thing, that this topic comes with amazing stories. So I want to hear. So
awesome.
And thanks, Chloe. It was wonderful.
Thanks. Always.
And that wraps up today's topics. We are so glad you stopped by. Be sure to join the Mormon Happy Hour on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Patreon. If you smiled, please drop us a 5-star review wherever you found us. See you next week. Cheers!